Today, our guest is Kate Gardner. She writes, she shoots, she tweets. Kate Gardner is a digital strategy consultant who works with media organizations and nonprofits. She creates online strategies to help companies find their voice on social media. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine. So tell me a little bit about your experience, how you became a journalist.
I did it the old-fashioned way, all of the thousands of internships leading to the Great Recession, which put me in graduate school at Medill in 2008. And then I started working with new and different clients, I guess at the beginning of the true era of social media for news, starting in Chicago at WBEZ, moving to PBS NewsHour. I went freelance for a while, then went to Al Jazeera, and then I started my own company here in New York, consulting with a lot of bigger names that find me interesting still, which is convenient.
So how did you get into social media?
During said Great Recession, there were no jobs in reporting. I thought I wanted to be a features reporter or a city desk reporter. I wanted to do the hardcore breaking news stuff. But none of the organizations I wanted to work with were particularly online first. And B, none of them had space really in their newsrooms for another person who wanted to do that. But there were a lot of opportunities to develop web strategies and work with online community building, and also to connect new tools with those newsrooms that really simplified the way that we were producing content.
So what is it you like about social media? Or not like?
I don't know if it's like anymore. I think it was the pace of it. You know, it is honestly the only thing that's faster than breaking news. And so that's always been very, very engaging and something that pulls me back to the newsroom every single time I think about going someplace else and doing something different. The thing that you can like is the repeated interactions with your community and the obvious growth of both your statistics and your impact. The thing that you cannot like is that, instead of thinking creatively, some of us have started to pander to our audiences, and that has led to a little bit of a decline in the quality of content. It's also become very Me Too, which means that everybody's on it, and so it's not as innovative, it's not as creative. As the internet becomes a little bit more stable and as the Wild West goes away, we're going to keep seeing this sort of control kind of clamp down on both what the content we're doing, or how content is getting out, and on the tools that we can experiment with and the freedom to experiment.
So who are those people who are clamping down? Is it the news organizations? Is it just companies that want to sort of control the message?
It's all sorts of things. It's a diversification of audience. It's the realization that social media is in fact important and impactful in a way that no one really expected it to be. It's the realization that social can also highlight your failings. It kind of showcases the best parts of your organization and also highlights the weaknesses in it. If you've got issues communicating between departments, you can become really sensitive to the fact that messaging is not consistent between those parts of your organization. If you have speed issues or you have one employee who's clearly doing the bulk of the work, that becomes rapidly apparent, and it becomes kind of overly tied to that individual employee's work rather than a piece of what your brand's doing. And I think that's both good and bad. I mean, you're creating a social media rock star who can only bring you more and more street cred, as it were. But you're also diversifying and diluting the messaging that you're putting out there. And so it can be a real struggle, especially with the older the organization, to build something that has the same sort of gravitas that everything else kind of does, and that a lot of us have built for many, many generations around specific either distribution points or audience verticals. So, it's definitely, it's a shift. It's a new form of communication.
You've worked at news organizations, both hyperlocal and global. How different is it to develop a social media voice for a local community as compared to something global?
I think it depends on what you're looking for returns. If you're looking at local stuff, it's going to be more impactful if you have 500 people who live in an area that has 1,000. If you're looking at a global impact, it's much harder to make the noise that you want to, and it's much harder to reach a diversified audience consistently, both because of time zones and just because, you know, messaging has to be both consistent and localized. It has to be specific to the niche that you're going after, but it also has to be broad enough that it has some appeal to people outside of the organization. So, you know, it's sort of that kind of stuff. There are a finite number of people who live in your local community and who are interested in it. It's definitely a decent number, no matter where you are, but it's still going to be a finite number. Globally focused brands are definitely not looking at any sort of cap other than the population of the earth. So it kind of depends on your end goals. But I think social it sort of illustrates ways that you can and cannot frame your voice for those audiences.
Tell us about your company, Distill Media.
There's not much to say. I mean, it's sort of an outgrowth of my freelancing. I've been freelancing for most of my career just because that's how the market was, and it was easier to make a decent income if I did it that way. I pulled it into a company primarily because my accountant started to say that I had to, and also because I needed to start having employees who can, you know, write some social content, who have time to schedule and book appointments for me. And then, you know, it's also just kind of scale. If we have 15 accounts, I can only personally manage so many before I need to go do something completely different in business development or attend some meeting or, you know, whatever the client's expectations are.
Now, who are your clients? Are they nonprofits? Are they businesses, big, small?
I've worked with a lot of public media branches. Right now I'm working with WNYC and CBS Interactive. So it's really depends on the scale of the projects. But I would say that I have a preference for nonprofit media and public media if given the option.
Now, what do you see as the value of social media for a company or organization? Why is it important that, you know, some company develop a social media strategy?
Most companies need it just so that they're aware and they're sort of guarding their territory. It depends on the size of the organization and how long they've been around. But being active and engaged on social can only help a young company, and being active and engaged on social can only help and encourage specific programming initiatives. It's also really important so that if in a crisis situation, you have the channels engaged and open to really reach out into the community of people who are either dependent on you, interested in you, or who are going to support you through that crisis, whatever it might be and however big that might be.
Okay. What organizations and companies, media news outlets, et cetera, who do you think is doing a good job with their social media?
I think it really depends on what you're looking for. I really like engaged and informative strategies, but I also know that those kind of fizzle out after about 100,000 followers on Twitter. So, you know, you can really directly respond to your listeners and your viewers, but I don't know where it's sort of an economies of scale problem. You're only relevant until a certain point. You know, I really like what WNYC did during Sandy. That was actually authored by Caitlin Thompson, their politics editor. And I really enjoy what PBS NewsHour has continued to do over its past 4 or 5 years. Huffington Post does do good things in terms of its social and digital distribution strategies, though, you know, they have different content and you can have whatever opinion about that you'd like. I've been enjoying what BuzzFeed's been doing lately, both because of how active and engaged its authors and editors are, and because of the way that they're using social media to both program their site and to encourage participation and interaction on it. Another one that's kind of fun is The Verge, primarily because of what they're doing in terms of audience experience on site, in addition to just the decent creation of content.
Now, you were in Phoenix recently for the Knight Ridder News Foo event. What was the event about? What did you take away from it?
News Foo is an annual gathering of about 150 of the best minds in media. And it's hosted by Google, Tim O'Reilly, and Knight Foundation. And between those three organizations, their connections mean that you get this crew of technologists and media pundits and everybody else's. It's really kind of hard to match anywhere else. I think the most fun part to me was just hearing, you know, Harper Reed was there from the Obama campaign, and hearing his war stories from from Chicago was kind of awesome. Working, you know, actually getting to talk to Tim O'Reilly is always good because, you know, he's one of the guys who invented the internet in a variety of ways. You know, and I think for me, one of the reasons I went is there are so many people there who think creatively about, you know, we're all kind of past, oh my God, journalism is dead. And now we're all looking forward to, okay, journalism is dead. Long live journalism. What are we going to do next? And I think that was the most interesting aspect of this news foo. If you have been on the conference circuit as much as a lot of us have, you've heard all of the "oh my God, woe is us" sort of speeches, but you haven't heard, okay, here's a creative solution to a specific niche audience. This is how we're monetizing. This is how we're doing what we want to do, and how we're reaching that audience that's respected us for so long. And I think the other thing that we got to talk a lot about is the use of data and visualization and sort of spatial awareness and data, connecting like the community into an aggregate and then being able to tell the story of that aggregate and spot trends amongst them. I always like to talk to all of the data nerds, and it was really fun hanging out with all of the best ones in the globe. So
what was did you have any conversation that you really just kind of blew your mind this time?
Actually, we spent a lot of time talking about women in technology, and the role that we aren't playing in a lot of ways in both the background and in the foreground of storytelling and in sort of the aggregate picture. Harper told a lot of stories about how he was trying to recruit women and people of color into his team at Obama for America, and how he just couldn't. And I think that continues to strike a chord across several of groups of speakers, conferences, and in general across many of the tech verticals, just because, you know, there are not enough women who are out there advocating for for ourselves and for our skills. And there are not enough women who are trained as engineers or who are trained in the technical side of the internet to really help to provide balance and perspective for these male-dominated rooms. So that was really interesting. And I think it was kind of fun that it was Harper who was bringing it up because, you know, he's a dude. and of course, Rachel Sklar started a lot of the conversation. So that's kind of how that works. I think we're all looking forward to the time that, you know, we're beyond some sort of technical glass ceiling. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever encountered any glass ceiling for you being a female in journalism and just what you're able to do? Not necessarily technical, but just, you know, social media and reporting and writing. Have you ever encountered anything like that? Personally,
you know, I think that the trick to all of it is that I'm probably pretty tough as a girl, and it's not the first thing that comes to mind in the context of my career. It never has been, never probably will be. I don't much care about that side of stuff. I know that it definitely impacted how comfortable I was at Al Jazeera. And conversely, it's been incredibly entertaining to work at WNYC, which has been, is female dominated, you know, from the CEO on down, at least half the department heads are female. So that's kind of, that has been an amazing contrast for me in the last like 2 or 3 years. But in general, I think being a female reporter is an asset as long as you treat it as an asset. And it's just kind of, it's how you use it and it's how you look at it. You know, I've covered some male-dominated sports and male-dominated industries, and it's definitely been incumbent upon me to use my girlness, I guess, to get the story I wanted. But I also know that a lot of people have told me things that they didn't want to tell me just because they're too busy. They're distracted by the whole girl thing. So I'm happy with it. And, you know, I'm somewhat conscious of it when I have to be, but I don't choose to be.
Do you wish that you didn't have to have that sort of aspect be part of the conversation if you, as a journalist, that you couldn't be just viewed as a journalist?
I think, actually, I don't really care. You know,
I'm not trying to make you be the, you know, the spokesman for the women's movement, but I'm just curious that we sort of got into this conversation, you know, just what your take was.
No, I think I am more inclined to take advantage of whatever assets I can find to either get myself into a position where it's beneficial to me or to get away from the discussion. But I think in the greatest scheme of things, it would be lovely to have more women coders. I don't think I've ever worked with a female programmer who was in a higher position on the hierarchy on a news story. There are only about 10 of them. So my odds are pretty slim. But, you know, I also think at this point, I have worked with so many dude coders that I don't know that I would know how to relate to another girl who's doing the same things that I've done with so many different male-dominated teams. So, yeah, I have absolutely no idea. I don't particularly wish for it to go away. I kind of accept it as it is. That might be a flaw in my whole, you know, being a prominent female person in this situation. But it's also an asset because since I don't care, you know, it's not something that is brought up in conversation. And it's not something that we, you know, continually, we go out of our way to talk about. So I don't know if we need to or not, but such is life.
Yeah. Well, I've worked in actually, the last few newsrooms I've worked in have been female dominated as far as the staff goes. So it's never really kind of an issue for me. It never was a concern. But every once in a while, you hear somebody talking about it, and it, you know, we all have different things that are impacting us, our ability to do our job. Just, you know, we got into the sideline here, and I was just curious as to what your thoughts on it were. So tell me, What are your thoughts about social media in general? I mean, what's its value for people? I mean, who as journalists, who should be using social media? How should they be using it?
I think that it's not necessarily a fad. I think it's really important that we continue building these communities. I think that we have to start driving our audiences back to our freaking websites, though, because we have managed to put ourselves in an awkward position in terms of Facebook, where we're paying to play with people who were our consumers in the first place, you know, and we kind of give them to them. And it was very brilliant on the side of Facebook, and I appreciate that. And it was brilliant in terms of online audience centralization, which is nice. But it is not contributing that as much to our ad spends. It's not helping us to really build and engage on our pages in the way that we really want them to. So I don't want to be put in a position where I'm paying to play with people who I've spent so many years encouraging to participate and discuss topics and consume our content. And I know that's a situation we've become a part of in Facebook. On Twitter, it's not as much of a situation because, you know, it's a broadcast medium. People expect it to be a broadcast medium, and the entire nature of its sharing is a little bit more decentralized. You know, the distribution of content is still controlled almost entirely by people on Twitter, and it is entirely controlled by an algorithm on Facebook, and the algorithm can be mechanically adjusted for profitability. The ad-supported model of Twitter is a little bit more difficult to monetize, and that's going to be trouble for Twitter continually for the next million years, but as far as Facebook goes, you know, they are going to monetize to the best of their ability because of the IPO and because, you know, they have more than a billion people on their website.
And we've helped to create these platforms where we have our content and these discussions that we created on their space as opposed to our space. And then those people are giving all their personal information and demographic information to Facebook. So it's, they built a playground. It's it's difficult for us to get our people back from it or to figure out how to use that to monetize our content, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And well, and you know, as the people who invented vertical distribution systems, you know, we should be better at this. We should have, I don't know that news should have built Facebook, but, you know, we should have been more innovative about it in the first place. And now I'm playing catch up, and well, you know, news is always playing catch up, so we'll see what happens.
Well, that's pretty much our conversation. I appreciate you coming and talking to me, Kate. If people want to get in contact with you, how do they do that?
I'm always on Twitter. It's at Kate Gardner, or you can send me an email at kate@dstl.it.
We've been speaking to Kate Gardner of Distill Media from New York. You have a good weekend.
Oh, you too.
Okay, thanks a lot. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a podcast about the current state of journalism. You can follow us on Twitter at All Journalism, and you can find out more information about our podcast at itsalljournalism.com.